Good morning, everyone, and welcome to you all, whether you're sitting here in the pews or joining us via the web camera. Well done on figuring out that today was Sunday again. And welcome to anyone who happens to listen in to us at a later date on the website. We begin with our opening words. This is a good morning to be together. Winter's darkness still holds sway, and cold, blustery days keep us indoors. We come here, drawn by the warmth of familiar faces, to the welcoming walls of this house. Here, for this hour, we open ourselves to new understanding, reassurance, and hope. In this place, truth, love, and challenge meet. Welcome. It is a good morning to be together. And our chalice lighting words are from a poem written by a lady called Minnie Haskins. And I said to the man who stood at the door of the year, give me a light that I may tread safely into the unknown. And he replied, go out into the darkness and put your hand into the hand of God. That will be to you better than light and safer than a known way. So I went forth, and finding the hand of God, tread safely into the night. And he led me towards the hills and the breaking of day in the lone east. Our first hymn this morning is hymn number 38, Morning Has Broken. Let us pray. The old year has turned and is drawing to its close. Let us remember the changes of the passing year, some good and some not so good. Let us embrace what is positive and learn from what is negative. Let us resolve to be open to transformation in ourselves that change may bring. We acknowledge that we have failed to do our best by others, and sometimes we have failed to do the best by ourselves. By learning from but not holding on to mistakes, let us relinquish the resentments of our own failures. We acknowledge suffering of pain and loss. We know our hearts can make room for our memories and allow healing so that we can carry our loves and our losses together in our lives. In the sparseness and clarity of winter, let us look to the promise of a new year. Sense the possibilities forming within us. Feel the silent stirrings of life beneath our feet. The nights are still long, but they're getting shorter. The days are still darker, but they're getting lighter. Nature still seems to sleep, but she is awakening. Winter is preparing the earth for spring. Let us give thanks. Now can we say together the prayer Jesus taught us? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Our reader this morning is Denise.
Good morning, everyone. There's an online newsletter or kind of website that I discovered recently called Psych, and they have some really interesting articles from time to time. This one was very long, so I have edited it significantly, and I hope it's still intelligible with my editing. With the new year upon us and people beginning to think about New Year's resolutions and things, how we want our lives to be in the future, this one struck a chord with me. And it's about how to start having fun. Fun isn't frivolous, it's vital for your well-being. So this article gives a step-by-step plan to bring more pleasure to your busy life. Do you ever wonder if life could or should be more fun? In today's fast-paced world, especially in Western nations, many of us find ourselves struggling to experience a consistent level of joy. The stress and demands of modern daily life can feel overwhelming, leaving little time and energy for enjoyable experiences. In its simplest of terms, fun is any activity you find pleasurable and are drawn to. A more psychological definition invokes the concept of valence, the pleasantness or unpleasantness of an emotional stimulant. Fun is any activity on the positive side of valence, sometimes referred to in scientific literature as hedonistic tone. The type of activity you're engaged in doesn't really matter. Of course, there are some activities that aren't really pleasurable yet trick you into thinking you're having fun because they numb discomfort and relieve your negative valent state. This can range from something as simple as mindlessly scrolling social media to detrimental forms of escapism such as alcohol and drug abuse. To reap fun's benefits, you want your fun to be enriching and sustainable, whether it is found at your work, engaging with loved ones and friends, connecting with an interest or hobby, or simply participating in something that flexes your curiosity. The list of psychological and physical benefits we derive from living a joyful life includes reduced stress, improved immune function, and increased longevity. From Kathleen Dillon's seminal research looking at how positive emotions enhance the immune system to the respected work of Ed Diner, whose research built a case that joyful people live longer, fun's positive benefits have been well established. If you need more persuading about the importance of fun, consider the hedonistic flexibility principle. Thoroughly investigated in 2016 by a team of scientists at MIT, Harvard, Stanford, and elsewhere, this principle suggests that people who do not incorporate fun into their lives have a significant likelihood of experiencing burnout, leading to a negative cycle that can result in them seeking unhealthy forms of escapism to alleviate their discomfort. In contrast, those who intentionally make time for fun tend to begin their days with more energy and enthusiasm. They are actually more productive, innovative, and willing to take on challenges than those who work long hours without allowing themselves time for leisure. In short, if you can find more ways to integrate fun into your life, you will unlock your full potential, become more resilient, and you'll be better equipped to tackle the challenges that life throws your way. As with all of these American self-help websites is then a list of how-tos for achieving fun. There are just two that I thought were really important to me, and they are examining your beliefs about fun. The first step to having fun is to identify and challenge the limiting belief that might be holding you back from experiencing fun, mainly the idea that fun is frivolous or an unproductive use of time. And the second one that I found really important was practicing grateful reminiscing, which is gratefully reminiscing about fond memories. And that's like gratitude on steroids, and a great way to extend the value of the fun you've already had. As you develop your habit of grateful reminiscing, you'll likely notice an increase in positive emotions such as happiness, contentment, and appreciation. Studies have shown that the benefit of this type of disposition included improved mental and emotional health, stronger relationships, and increased life satisfaction. So fun is far from a frivolous pursuit, and it is a vital component of a life well lived. As you work through the steps in the article, you'll discover the transformative power of having fun for yourself. With some practice, the journey towards your fun habit will not only bring you more happiness and satisfaction, but also improve your relationships and enhance your productivity and support good health, both psychologically and physically. So I hope you all have a happy and fun-filled new year.
Now, we have to have a children's story, but I won't call the children to the front. But this is a once upon a time story. It's about a man, and he was single and he didn't have any children, but he was an uncle to several young children. And one day he was asked to babysit. He didn't particularly relish the thought. He wondered, how am I going to entertain these three children for the afternoon? And he thought, let's see, what could we do? Because he'd no toys around the place. But he was looking at his newspaper, and there was a big picture of the world, all the countries in the world, on a picture on his newspaper. And he thought, I know how I'm going to keep them quiet. He thought, I will make a jigsaw of all these countries. I'll cut them out of this newspaper and ask them to stick them together, sort of an improvised jigsaw. And this is so difficult, it'll take them ages. And that's what he did. He carefully cut around all the countries, juggled them up, it was a coloured picture, and told the children that they had to put them back together again. And he sat down with his newspaper ready to put his feet up and enjoy a few hours' peace and quiet with the children entertaining themselves. 10 minutes later, they were back with the whole thing put together. And he was amazed. How did they manage this? And one of them said, well, actually, when we turned over the page, there was a picture of a person, and we just put that person together. And then when you turned it around, the whole world was sorted out. And it has good message for us. It's really the people that need sorting out, not the world. When the people are okay, the world is working fine itself. Now we're going to have our second hymn, just because I like this one. It's hymn number 23, Bring Many Names, Beautiful and True. Hymn number 23.
Thank you.
For my reading, I have chosen a piece. It's by someone called Cole Arthur Riley, and it's called The Spiritual Practice of Awe. And it begins with a quotation. My faith is held together by wonder, by every defiant commitment to being present and paying attention. I think awe is an exercise, both a doing and a being. It is a spiritual muscle of our humanity that we can only keep from atrophying if we exercise it habitually. I sit in the clearing behind my home, listening to the song of the barn swallows mixed with the sound of cars speeding by. I watch the milk current through my tea and the little leaves dance free from their pouch. I linger in the mirror and I don't look away. I trace the shadows hugging my lips and I don't look away. Awe is not a lens through which we see the world. It is our sole path to seeing. Any other lens is not a lens, it is a veil. We come to believe that, I have come to believe that seeing the veils of the world peeled back again and again, if only for a moment, is a form of salvation. When I speak of wonder, I mean the practice of beholding the beautiful, beholding the majestic, the snow-capped Himalayas, the sun setting on the sea, but also the perfectly mundane things. That soap bubble reflecting in your kitchen, the oxidized underbelly of the stainless steel pan. More than the grand beauties of our lives, wonder is about having the presence to pay attention to the commonplace. It could be said that to find beauty in the ordinary is a greater exercise than climbing to the mountaintop. To encounter the holy in the ordinary is to find God in the liminal, in the places where we might subconsciously exclude it, including sensory moments that are often illegibly spiritual. Wonder includes the capacity to be in awe of our humanity, even our own. It allows us to jettison the dangerous belief that things worthy of wonder can only be located in nature hikes and scenic outlooks. This can distract from the beauty flowing through us daily. For every second that our organs and our bones sustain us is a miracle. When the bones heal, when our wounds scab over, this is our call to marvel at our bodies, their regeneration, their ability, and their fragility. This grows our sense of dignity. To be able to marvel at the face of our neighbor with the same awe as we have for the mountaintop, the sunlight reflecting, this manner of vision is what will keep us from destroying one another. Wonder requires a person not to forget themselves, but to feel themselves so acutely that their connectedness to everything comes into focus. In sacred awe, we are part of that story. Instead of a prayer, I have a lovely poem here from John O'Donoghue, and this will be followed by silence for a time of personal reflection. The poem is called For a New Beginning. In the out-of-the-way places of the heart, where your thoughts never think to wander, this beginning has been quietly forming, waiting until you were ready to emerge. For a long time, it has watched your desire, feeling the emptiness growing inside you, noticing how you willed yourself on, still unable to leave what you had outgrown. It watched you play with the seduction of safety and the grey promises that sameness whispered. Heard the waves of turmoil rise and relent. Wondered, would you always live like this? Then the delight when your courage kindled and you stepped in onto new ground, your eyes young again with energy and dream, a path of plentitude opening before you. Though your destination is not yet clear, you can trust the promise of this opening. Unfurl yourself to the grace of beginning that is at one with your life's desire. Awaken to your spirit of adventure. Hold nothing back. Learn to find ease in risk. Soon you will be at home in a new rhythm, for your soul senses the world that is waiting for you. The title of today's address is Goodbye to the Old, Welcome the New. Right now in Sydney, Australians are preparing to count down the minutes to ring in the year 2024. And slowly, moving from east to west, country after country will mark the start of a new year with fireworks and celebrations. In those mixed-up days between Christmas and New Year, the media have run accounts of items that made the news in the year 2023. As I watch these, I'm struck at how quickly so many of them are already forgotten. Items that led the news for days or even weeks proved indeed to be much ado about nothing. In the absence of current political news, the newspapers concentrate on historic events in papers released under the 30-year rule of cabinet confidentiality. And some of those are of interest to historians and political analysts. But again, mostly we only glance at the old grainy photos and marvel at the dated fashion looks. And of course, analysts, and perhaps we, are speculating about what the year 2024 may bring. January is named after the Roman god Janus. And Janus is depicted having two faces. One face looks back and the other face looks forward to the future. And that's an excellent representation of what is happening in Western culture at this time of the year. We review the past and attempt to peek into the future. But I think that the world is divided into two groups, the people who love to party in the new year and those of us who prefer to let it slip in quietly with little fuss. And of course, this is the time for New Year's resolution. And these, of course, are usually of short duration because although it may seem to be that the 1st of January is a good time to make a new beginning, on a practical level, it's not a sensible time to initiate changes. Christmas is still lingering. In 2005, the third Monday of January was named as the most depressing day of the year. 3 weeks into the new year, the most depressing day. And that's because the weather is cold, the nights are dark, the bills for Christmas are landing on the mat, and payday is still a distance away. And 3 weeks into the new year, we'll be probably beginning to realize that once again, we haven't managed to stick to the New Year's resolutions. And I keep going back every year to the article Theron wrote in Uskill some years ago when she suggested that the 1st of February is a far better time for New Year's resolutions. The days are brighter, the weather's warmer, it improves our mental outlook, and that gives a better hope of making some changes. And of course, celebrating this new year on the 1st of January is just a Western cultural tradition. The Chinese citizens will celebrate their new year on the 10th of February. Hindus will celebrate on the 9th of April. Jews will celebrate on the 2nd of October. And in Celtic tradition, the new year begins on the 1st of November. So it's just traditions. And yet, there's something about tradition that draws us to making resolutions to change on the 1st of January. I think it's something to do with having a new calendar, a new diary. The pages of the calendar are lovely and fresh and clean. There's no grubby marks on it. It's not creased. And it seems like an opportunity for changing ourselves as well. The sticking point is, of course, is that unlike the new diary and the new calendar, we carry the past with us. We are the sum of all our past experience, past thoughts, and past actions. And there is no delete key for those human experiences. There's no reset button on humans. We may try to turn a fresh page. We may try to bury the past, but it does come with us, unknown, on our shoulder, affecting us for good and for ill. And that reality is much clearer in the Celtic tradition of marking the passage of time. The Celts represented the passage of time using a circle. It's called the wheel of the year. So life moves in a circle. We move through the passing days. There's no arbitrary cut-off point that marks a new year. We pass through the cardinal markers on the wheel of time from, say, the winter solstice to Imbolc in February, the spring equinox, Bealtaine, and the summer solstice, and so on. It's a circle. Janus, the old god that looks to the past and the future, and that Celtic wheel of the year are both useful images when thinking about New Year and the possibility of making resolutions that may be more successful. But I think maybe the idea would be to take January to reflect and decide where you want to go. And as ever, we have to deal with the past events. Looking at past events may be interesting, but how do we review our individual past lives? Every 12-step program to recovery says that we must deal honestly with the past. And that's not about wallowing in guilt. Honestly facing up to the past is the path to healing. Accepting responsibility, accept what has happened, apologize, make amends, and forgive. Forgive yourself. Self-forgiveness is really important, as well as forgiving others. How often do we feel that, okay, we forgive so-and-so for doing so-and-so, but do you actually forgive yourself so that you can leave the past behind? Because until we make honest peace with the past, it will always shadow the present. Buddhism has useful pointers to helping change behavior. In the Buddhist tradition, the secret to changing behavior is to understand what motivates that behavior. And the path to understanding is to pay attention to what perhaps what we want to change. Pay attention to the emotion behind it. Why do you want to eat, drink, spend, or do whatever? Why do I want to do that? I want to change the behavior. Don't say, I'm just going to stop doing it. Say, why do I need to do it? And the thing about the Buddhists is say, just watch your behavior, note your emotions. And even as you're watching it, you will see it change. And that's really important. Notice it change, because change is a constant. When we change our emotions, only then will our actions change automatically, when we understand why it is we're doing something. So perhaps we can usefully spend some time in January paying attention to our past so that we can allow ourselves to change through understanding rather than stepping into a straitjacket of New Year's resolutions to change without understanding why. People say, oh, I eat too much. Why do you eat too much? You go on a diet, inevitably when the weight is gone, you forget the diet and it'll go back because the reason is still there. And when it comes to New Year resolutions, mostly the changes we consider making are trivial. That wonderful font of knowledge, Google, tells me that in the year 2022, the top five New Year's resolutions were exercise more, lose weight, get organized, learn a new skill, live life to the fullest. I think four of those resolutions boil down to rearranging the deck chairs of our lives. The reading I did this morning points to what could be a positive approach to help us do that useful one to live life to the fullest. When we think of moments of awe, we tend to focus on the big things. The awe of a starlit sky, the majesty of the mountains. In the reading, the writer points out that we should look for moments of awe in the small things in our lives. The natural world is filled with moments of love, of awe, and we are part of that world of nature. Look for the awe in yourself. That's something we don't think of doing very often. How often do we catch sight of our reflection in the mirror and turn away because we see only imperfections that are measured according to some arbitrary standard of what is considered beautiful? We see only the lines, the few extra pounds, the grey hair, the things we don't like about ourselves. Do we ever think to take time to see the wonder in ourselves? Are we ever awed by the gift of hearing, of sight, to wonder at how we move, the fact that we can speak, that we're here alive at this moment? The poet Walt Whitman wrote a beautiful poem, The Song of Myself, and in it he says, there is nothing except miracles. One of these lovely lines in the poem is, the narrowest hinge of my hand puts to scorn all machinery. Do we ever wonder at the fact that we can open and close our hands, that we have a strong grip and a precise grip, and that we do that automatically? Walt Whitman goes on to say, the mouse is miracle enough to stagger sextillions of infidels. Mouse, a dormouse, how much more complicated and awesome are we? So as we go into the new year, let's notice how we're living. Look at your past, not to feel guilty, not to get angry, but to understand how you're feeling and what you were doing. And see the miracles in yourself. We are the miracles. Being alive is a miracle. As we come to change the date on the calendar, it is another, just another day. But it's an opportunity to live the gift of life here and now. Time to be bowled over by the awe and miracle of yourself. So let's celebrate this new year. Celebrate the gift of life, love, the gift of your being here, alive, right now. Amen, and Happy New Year. I should be safely tucked into my bed before 12 o'clock tonight. Now we're going to have a hymn number 163, For the Earth Forever Turning, hymn number 163. her offertory will now be taken. Our notices. Fair trade tea and coffee are served downstairs. Do please join us. And there's copies of January 2024 magazine on the table outside. Wednesday is the usual service of reflection in the church and available on the web camera 1:05 to about 1:35. Traditionally, until COVID struck us, once a month we used to give our offertory to a charity collection. COVID interrupted all of that. So we decided that at Christmas time, when the church is usually fairly full, we would give our three collections this month to charities. So we did that for the carol service, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And those three collections were in aid of the Capuchin Centre, and they amounted to €3,528.90. As well as that, we sent over 100 pairs of pyjamas to them, numerous sets of hats and gloves, etc. And there's a letter in Uskult acknowledging that from the Capuchin Centre. We also gave them lots of gift tokens. So I think we've done a little to help those less well-off citizens of our capital. Also at the carol service, we had a cake sale, and Alison had lots of crafts there, and a raffle. And the lovely thing about the raffle, the idea for the raffle came from Jane Meredith, who said, "I will knit a teddy. Will you have a raffle at Christmas?" And that's what started this raffle. And that raffle and that sale of work and all of the rest raised €1,491 for new lighting in the church. So from small beginnings, great things grew. It was a monster raffle at the end and great fun. Now we're going to have our final hymn, and it's called Ring Out Wild Bells. Not sure, do we know it, Josh? No. Will you play it through, Josh, and then we'll sing it. Hymn number 58. May the love of this season be with us to the days of the coming year to give us strength, courage, and faith. May the peace of this season be ever present in us and bring us comfort and hope. May the light of this season shine in our hearts to bring us happiness and laughter. And may we share that joy with others. Amen.